Hello, this is Earl Nightingale. For more than 40 years, I've been concerned with discovering those unique elements that make a person successful in every area of life. I've discovered that often it's the seemingly insignificant actions that lead us away from the path we want to take and cause us all the trouble. In this cassette program, you'll meet a man whose philosophy is so basic that you'll wonder how you function without it. He'll show you how you can take control of your life and achieve whatever you want by negotiating successfully with other people. Your personal and professional relationships will be enhanced. Never again will you feel so intimidated by another person's disapproval that you turn and walk away from your goal. With the win-win philosophy, you'll be able not only to get whatever you want, but to get it on terms that are fair to everyone involved. Your every dream, from prosperity to personal peace, will be within your grasp as you quickly and productively reach negotiated settlements. Roger Dawson is acknowledged as an international authority on the art of negotiation. He was born in England and negotiated his way around the world four times before settling in America. He was president of one of the largest sales organizations in America, where he managed more than 500 sales associates who sold more than $400 million each year. Today, Roger Dawson is a nationally known speaker and business consultant. Thousands of executives, professionals, and salespeople have paid hundreds of dollars each to attend his negotiation seminars. In this Nightingale Conant program called You Can Get Anything You Want, Roger Dawson sits down with you in an educational and stimulating private seminar. You can't help but come away with a new appreciation for the extraordinary skills of this master motivator and with a new awareness of the places in your life where these negotiation techniques will make a difference. And now it is my very great pleasure to introduce you to Roger Dawson.
Hello, this is Roger Dawson. I wrote the book on negotiating. It's called You Can Get Anything You Want, but you've got to do more than ask. And you really can get anything you want if you'll just realize these five things. Number one, you're negotiating all the time. Negotiating is not just for prison wardens or FBI agents or union negotiators. Anytime you're eyeball to eyeball, belly button to belly button, kneecap to kneecap, toe to toe with another human being, you're negotiating. And if you know how to do it right, if you know how to structure a negotiation so that the other people get what they want, but at the same time you get what you want, not only will you be a lot more successful in life, but a lot of the pressure and the stress and the friction will go out of your life. Number two is the realization that anything you'll ever want in life is presently owned or controlled by somebody else. Now, this is not 1849, where you could buy a sluice box down at the hardware store and head for the hills of California and pick up gold and become wealthy, because it is laying out there. Everything is presently owned or controlled by somebody else. Now, doesn't it make sense that we spend a little time learning how to get it, and how to get it in such a way that we're not dominating people, we're not turning people off, but we're turning people on to us because we know how to get them what they want at the same time as we get what we want. So we should all be spending an awful lot of time studying negotiating. Yet it's amazing to me how few people have. In 1985, my daughter Julia graduated from USC. She graduated from the business school, one of the finest business schools in the country, in fact. Certainly one of the most expensive. Cost over $50,000 to put her through that school. But she didn't get 1 hour of negotiating training. So she came away from it feeling that business had to do with reading spreadsheets and profit and loss statements and the mechanics of running a business. And what you'll find out is what every businessman has found out, that the answer to good business is not in the mechanics, but the answer is in handling people, in negotiating with employees and suppliers and customers. The art of negotiating, so critical to you getting what you want. Number three is the understanding that there are some predictable responses to the maneuvers that take place in a negotiating situation. Now, I call these maneuvers gambits. Now, that's a chess term. It means any maneuver for advantage. For example, whenever you say yes to the first offer, You set up a predictable response. Let me have you tell me what those responses are. Let's say, for example, that you're interested in acquiring a used automobile. And the people are asking $10,000 for the car, which is not a bad price, but you say to yourself, well, I'm going to be a sneaky negotiator. I'm going to make them a super low offer. I'm going to take them an offer of $7,000. And sure, they're going to get angry with me at such a low offer. They'll probably throw me out on my ear the minute they hear about it. But maybe we'll end up splitting the difference, and it'll still be a good buy. But I'll take them a really low offer just to see what happens. So you go on in, and you sit down with the husband and wife that own the car, and you present the $7,000 offer, and you wait for them to explode with rage. And what actually happens is the husband looks at the wife and says, well, what do you think, dear? And the wife says, oh, why don't we go ahead and take it and get rid of it anyway? What is your response when they say yes to an offer that you didn't expect them to accept? Well, I'm fairly sure that your first response would be, I could have done better. I could have maybe got it for $6,500 or $6,000. In actual fact, if you'd have taken them a $6,500 offer and they'd have accepted it, you still would have thought, I could have done better. A $6,000 offer, you still would have thought, I could have done better. You see, it has nothing to do with the price. It has to do with the way people say yes to you. What would your second response be if they jumped an offer that you didn't expect them to take? Probably, there's something wrong with the car. There's something wrong here that I didn't figure out. Those two responses are so predictable that in seminars around the country that I've conducted, when I ask the audience for their responses to that situation, I always get those two responses in that order. So part of the art of negotiating, which we'll spend quite a bit of time on, is learning that there are predictable responses to the maneuvers that take place. And we'll cover these gambits in sessions 3, 4, 5, and 6. We'll go through 20 of these specific gambits so that you understand what's going on in the negotiation. The fourth thing that we need to learn, if we're to get everything we want out of life, is that there are three critical factors to every negotiation. We'll devote all of session 7 to one of those factors, the understanding of power, the understanding of what makes one person able to influence another person. This will be particularly critical to you if you're in any form of management. There are 8 specific components that we'll discuss with you and show you how to react to them when they're used against you and how you use them to control the other person in the negotiation. In session 8, we'll talk about the other two elements that always affect the outcome of the negotiations, how important information is to the negotiations, and how critical the time element is. And the fifth thing we need to learn is that people are different. That we have to adjust to the fact that we have a specific personality style and that people with whom we'll be negotiating do, and when the two don't match, we have problems in the negotiation. And in sessions 9 and 10, we'll analyze your personality style for you. We'll show you how to adapt your negotiating style to the different personalities, and we'll show you how people negotiate differently because of their personality styles. And finally, in sessions 11 and 12, we'll wrap up with a discussion of body language and hidden meanings in conversation. I'm a firm believer in win-win negotiating. Instead of the style of negotiating that says that we should dominate the other person and outsmart them and trick them into doing things that they wouldn't normally do, I believe that negotiators should sit down and honestly work out their problems together and arrive at a situation where both of them can win in the negotiation. Now, your reaction to that may be, well, how on earth can that work? If I'm trying to buy something, I'm obviously trying to get the lowest price I possibly can for it. And if they're trying to sell, they're obviously trying to get the highest possible price they can for it. How on earth can we both win in the negotiations? So, let's start out with the most important issue. How can we arrive at win-win solutions in negotiations? There's 3 fundamental rules here. Rule number 1 is that if you narrow it down to one issue in the negotiations, if you are indeed only talking about price, I agree with you. Somebody does have to win. Somebody does have to lose. But there are always more issues than that in any negotiation. It's fascinating to study some of the international negotiations that go on and see the mistakes that are made and the elements that come together to contribute to the solution or lack of the solution. Take the Falkland Islands crisis, for example. I paid close attention to that because, being from England originally, it was kind of the last great flourish of the British Empire. But if you look at that negotiation, the Falkland Island crisis, and you only see one issue, who occupies the islands, the Argentinians or the British, of course there has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. But in actual fact, there were many more elements than that in the negotiation, weren't there? There was the prestige of the two nations. There was the political features of the two leaders involved. There are always many, many more elements than just the one element that are important in negotiations. So the art of win-win negotiating is to piece together those elements, like putting together a jigsaw puzzle, so that both people can win. So never narrow the negotiations down to one issue. At a seminar once, a real estate agent came up to me. He was very excited, he said, because he'd almost completed negotiating a very large commercial building. "We've been working on it for over a year now," he said, "and we've almost got it resolved. In fact, we've resolved everything except price, and we're only $50,000 apart." Well, I flinch when I hear things like that, because I know from now on, however much work he's put into it, now that he's narrowed it down to one issue, then there has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. And however close they may be, they could still be heading for trouble. So while we may establish momentum in the negotiations by finding a common ground on small issues, we'll talk about that later when we talk about negotiating gambits, never absolutely nail down all of the other issues so that you're narrowing it down to one issue. Rule number two that makes you a win-win negotiator is the understanding that people don't want the same thing. You know, we all have an almost overriding tendency to assume that other people want what we want, that what's important to us will be important to them. But that's not true. In fact, we all have a unique perspective of the world in which we live. There's 4.5 billion people in the world, and nobody sees things just the way that you do. And the assumption that they want what you want can never lead to a win-win negotiation. If I could hold up my hand with the palm facing you and ask you to describe my hand and compare it with my description of my hand, we'd get two totally different descriptions, wouldn't we? But it's not a question of one of us being right and one of us being wrong. We're both right. We're just seeing things from a different perspective. This is one of those things that's so simplistic, it's so easy to understand, and yet it's so very, very profound. Half of the problems in the world would go away today if people understood that, with very few exceptions, people are not right or wrong. They're just seeing things from a different perspective. This is very important to you if you are a supervisor. If you're a manager of any people at all, it's quite common for some of your employees to come to you with the heat on. They're in a temper, they're in a rage, so they're threatening to quit possibly, and they're saying, "Here's the conflict, here's what we're arguing about." And their assumption is that one of them is right and one of them is wrong, and they've come to you for you to make a decision as to who's right and who's wrong. Now, that puts you, as we Americans say, between a rock and a hard place, doesn't it? Whichever way you go, you're going to lose one of them. If you just take the time to point out that it's not a question of one being right and one being wrong, they're just seeing things from different perspectives. In actual fact, two people can look at exactly the same thing, have different opinions about it, and both be right, you'll be able to diffuse a lot of the conflict which may arise in your organization. So rule number two that makes you a win-win negotiator is to learn not to fall into the trap of assuming that the other people want the same thing that you do. And probably the biggest trap that most of us fall into is assuming that price is the most dominant issue in a negotiation. There are many, many other elements other than price that are important to people. So number three is that the understanding that we'll never be a win-win negotiator if we think that they want what we want. Because if we make that assumption, we further make the assumption that anything we do to help them in the negotiations, to help them get what they want, takes away from what we want. Let me give you a couple of examples to illustrate this. I do seminars around the country for real estate investors, and part of my service to them is that I offer a consulting service. They can call me anytime they're involved in a negotiation, and I will help them out. I got a call from a real estate investor in Seattle who had located a piece of land that he felt would make an excellent shopping center development. And he could hardly believe his good fortune because he felt that the other developers must have just overlooked it. So he got together a group of investors who would be willing to syndicate the development of the shopping center, and he approached the owner of the land with an offer to buy. And what he ran into was absolute indifference to his offer. The person who owned the land didn't say it was a bad offer, didn't say it was a good offer. He just wasn't interested in discussing an offer on the property at that particular time. Now, this is always a big problem when you're negotiating. You're always better off to have a strong objection to what you're doing than you are to meet with indifference. At my seminars, I asked for the unmarried people in the audience to answer this question. What's the opposite of love? Invariably, the answer comes hate. Well, we married people know better than that, don't we? We know that love and hate, when you're married, can be just that close. The real opposite of love is indifference. They simply don't care anymore. When they're throwing plates at you, you can handle that. But what's difficult to handle is when they're just not interested in discussing the problem. And that's the same thing when you're negotiating. You're always better off to have a strong objection than you are to meet with indifference. So I said to the Seattle investor, okay, quit telling me about the property. I know you're excited about it, but quit telling me about that, because the answer is never with the property. The answer is always with the person. Tell me all you know about the person. He said, well, I don't know too much. He's a very elderly man, evidently very, very sick, probably going to die within about a year or so, and he knows this. Very, very wealthy. Money is just not an issue to this person at all. He's just not interested in discussing the sale of this land. Well, what might this person be interested in? If we head around the other side of the negotiating table and understand that we can do something for this person that will not take away from our position because we don't want the same thing in the negotiation, then we can very quickly come to the conclusion that possibly this person might be interested in a monument to him. If he's old and sick and dying and wealthy, he might be interested in a monument. And we're in an excellent position to provide that for him because we can offer to name the shopping center after that person.
Editor.
You see, they didn't want the same thing. The buyer wanted the equity in the property. The seller really wasn't interested in that so much as he was
option.
The monument concept. And eventually, the investor didn't need the syndication that he had put together because the owner of the land was willing to deed the land over to him free and clear in return for a share in the syndication that they put in trust for the man's granddaughter and the promise that the shopping center would be named after him. That's a win-win solution, but it can only come when you understand that people don't want the same thing. In another instance, a man called me from Dallas. He was interested in acquiring a small business. He'd been negotiating with the sellers of the business. He found they were fairly flexible in terms of the terms on
one.
The property. They didn't necessarily need a lot of cash out of it, but they were fairly rigid on the price of the property.
Destination.
And he called me to see if I had any solutions to get the price down. So I said, well, quit telling me about the business.
About.
Tell me about the people. And he said, well, they're a middle-aged couple, the teenage children. That's really about all I know about them. I said, well, they do need some cash out of the business. Is that right? Oh, yes, they've asked for at least $4,000 cash. I said, well, what are they going to use that money for? He said, well, that they told me. Their daughter's going into private college this fall, and they need $4,000 for tuition money in September. Now, let's get around the other side of the negotiating table with the understanding that we can do things for them that won't take away from our position because we don't necessarily want the same thing. And think about their problem. They're scraping together $4,000 to pay tuition this September. What will they need next January? Another $4,000 for the second semester, right? Does it make any sense for them to put their daughter into private university in September if they're not sure that they could maintain the tuition for the second semester? Of course not. They'd be better off to put her in a state university. What will they need the following September? Well, another $4,000, maybe a little more. And the following January? In fact, they're going to need $4,000 each September and January for the next 4 years. Now we're concerned about their problem, and what the investor in Dallas worked out was that he would work out the carryback financing so that it paid out a lump sum of $4,000 each September and January for the next 4 years, thereby assuring them that their daughter could go through college. You see, they didn't want the same thing. He wanted the equity in the business. They wanted the assurance that their daughter could go through college. And win-win negotiating can only come when you understand that people don't want the same things in the negotiation.
Population.
So good negotiating becomes not just a matter of getting what you want, but also a matter of concern about the other person getting what they want. Now, please don't confuse negotiating with price cutting. A speaker told me, well, I don't negotiate my speaking fees. Well, if you have a product that is non-negotiable in terms of price, you had better become a very good negotiator. A store owner told me, our prices are fixed. We don't negotiate them. But you still negotiate. If you're trying to sell things at full price, you very definitely need to become a good negotiator. Conversely, a salesperson with an 8% negotiating range who gives it away all the time, he's not negotiating at all, is he? So don't confuse negotiating with price flexibility.
Around.
In fact, many of the speaking engagements that I have are from companies who are concerned about the lack of negotiating that their people are doing, not the amount of negotiating that their people are doing. I was hired by a large company in San Francisco, one of the largest suppliers of sound equipment to radio stations and television stations. They had given their salespeople an 8% negotiating range. Off of their list price, they could give up to 8%, and they found out that they were giving just about all of it. After we'd spent a day with them in a special workshop session teaching them negotiating, they were able to cut that price loss in half. So to someone with no flexibility in price negotiations, it becomes a matter of getting them to say yes. Yes, yes, yes. You can get them to say yes. Doesn't that word have a sweet ring to it? Some of the most exciting things that have ever happened to me have happened just after somebody has said yes. So what is the word no? To a good negotiator, no is simply an opening negotiating position. And the next time you make a proposal to someone and they say to you, that's the most outrageous idea I have ever heard, you must be out of your mind to think that we would go along with something as incredible as that. You simply say to yourself, isn't that an interesting opening negotiating position? In our next session together, we'll show you how progressing through the three specific stages of every negotiation will help lead you to a yes answer.